ye observe to do whatsoever I command you, I, the Lord, will turn away all wrath and indignation from you, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against you. Now I speak unto you concerning your families. If men will smite you or your families once, and ye bear it patiently and revile not against them, neither seek revenge, ye shall be rewarded.
Okay, so someone comes after us once, and you take it. Good job. Blessings in heaven. Sarah, 24 and 25.
All right. But if ye bear it no patiently, it shall be accounted unto you as being meted.
Yeah, so that means measured.
Okay, out as a just measure unto you. And again, if your enemy shall smite you the second time, and you revile not against your enemy, and bear it patiently, the reward shall be 100-fold.
Okay, so if somebody comes after you a second time, you still bear it patiently, not just blessings, but 100 times blessings. All right? Noel, 26, 27.
And again, if he shall smite you the third time, and ye bear it patiently, your reward shall be doubled unto you fourfold. And these three testimonies shall stand against your enemy, if you repent not, and shall not be blotted out.
All right. Susan, 31.
Nevertheless, thine enemy is in thine hands, and if thou rewardest him according to his works, thou art justified. If he has sought thy life, and thy life is endangered by him, thine enemy is in thine hands, and thou art justified.
Who was it that mentioned Nephi? Was it Amariel? 32? Go ahead, read verse 32 for us.
Behold, this is the law I gave unto my servant Nephi, and thy fathers Joseph and Jacob and Isaac and Abraham, and all mine ancient prophets and apostles.
So, if you were to sum up the Lord's law of retribution, what would it be?
You'll be blessed every time that you, you know, take it. And if your enemy doesn't repent, and by the third time, you're really blessed if you just keep turning the other cheek.
And if you don't, and you choose to go after him?
You're justified. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not yet. Nevertheless.
Nevertheless.
In your hands.
Yeah, exactly. By that time.
Thou art justified.
Thou art justified, yeah.
So.
But you got to take it a few times.
You do, right?
Yeah.
No, I think nevertheless means it's up to you.
But in the first, you got to first take it.
In the first few times.
I shouldn't say take it.
Well, if you want to be blessed and if you want it to stand as a testimony against them.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you got to tough it out.
Exactly.
But if your life's in danger and you decide, hey,
now, think about it, and I know a lot of our young people and those new to the Book of Mormon, they get to the episode with Nephi and Laban, and they think, hold on, this guy's going to be your prophet, and he's just killing people? Ugh, I don't know if I like you more.
That wasn't even like self-defense.
You know?
It's like the innocent drunken man.
Yeah. That's so innocent drunken man.
Well, and that's the thing, is, well, does this fit? Did Laban come after them at least three times? He came after him the first time when Laman goes. Comes after them the second time. Well, hold on, the first time would have been when Lehi was still there and they received the warning. I mean, the people, they were coming after Lehi then. Comes after the boys the first time, comes after the boys the second time. Add those up, we'd get three. Anyhow, you can see how there is this nice, I mean, it almost seems a little too tidy law of, okay, third time, then gloves come on.
Sorry, let's
go. That sounds a little dangerous, doesn't it? But it's at this point where the saints feel like they've been accosted. They've been accosted in Jackson County, Missouri. They're being accosted in Clay County, Missouri. And so what happens is an 18, that's an 8. 1830, oh. What do you look at?
8.
Is it 1838? No, it's not. Maybe it is.
Just a ballpark.
1830
something. What are you thinking?
When Caldwell County is established.
Whatever you put up there, ring belief.
Yeah, just whatever you say, right? Okay, it's 1836. 1836, the government in Missouri, they say, okay, you Mormons, yeah, we get it. We haven't been very nice. And so, we'll establish an entire county for you. So Israel, they get a nation after World War II. The Saints, they get a county in northern Missouri, where the Missourians say, we really don't like you, but we realize we haven't been very nice. And so if you'll take everyone and move up to Caldwell County, well, we'll leave you alone. Okay, now this is pre-extermination order. And we'll talk about the extermination order and exactly what that means and what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean shoot Saints on sight.
That's what it sounds like.
It does sound like that. But that's, unfortunately, that's not quite what it means. Well, maybe fortunately.
Fortunately, yeah.
Well, sometimes we like to play martyr, right?
I think we have enough true story martyr stories, though.
Yeah, really. We don't need to fabricate anymore. But anyhow, Caldwell County is established. Let me find my map here, make sure I have all of this right. So that's what's going on. They're starting to receive persecution here in Caldwell County as well. Now, a couple of famous places in Caldwell County. Probably heard of this one. Joseph, so Saints first start moving into Far West 3 years previous to this. Joseph moves to Far West. There's agitations, and the agitations are more political than they are religious. Okay, remember, we've had hundreds, starting to approach thousands of Latter-day Saints who live in Kirtland. Kirtland collapses. Far West is designated as the next place that they need to go. And so all of a sudden, there's an influx of Latter-day Saints who are feeling a little kicked around. They're feeling a little, Missouri, really? We gotta come back here? They're a little agitated, a little upset. And some of them are out for blood. Is it justified?
I don't think you should seek it out.
Okay.
I don't think the majority of them either are too agitated.
So I'll ask this question that comes from the New Testament. Can ye be angry and not sin?
Rock at your brother, you're in trouble.
Right? Which is interesting. Let's go to Matthew chapter, I think it's 5:22 is where that comes from.
I'm trying to take on Christ-like attributes.
Right.
You can't really be angry.
Was Christ angry in the temple?
Yeah, it's true. He was. We saw that video. He was throwing
anger
around.
Or was that something else?
Righteous indignation.
Well, let's talk about it. So righteous indignation, is that justified? Is that
natural?
Okay, so let's go with this. Rick, will you read Matthew 5:22?
I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool,
Does that verse sit wrong with anybody else?
Well, there's an important footnote there.
Right?
Yeah.
Read it for us.
In Joseph Smith's translation, he omits the words without a cause.
That kind of turns that whole verse right on its head, doesn't it? Now, this was fun. My father, he was on assignment by BYU Religious Education. He got to go over to England and study through their old libraries and look at the old English Bibles. And he got to trace when it was that phrase, without a cause, made it into the Sermon on the Mount. Now, he doesn't have any why, but he was able to find, I think it was like 16-something Bibles previous to that. He didn't have the phrase, Bibles post. And who knows, if there was some monk who was having a difficult time with one of his other monks. It's like, look, I know I'm not supposed to be angry, but I have a really good cause. Without a cause. Now that's total speculation. I have no idea. But somehow that phrase weasels its way in. And so again, can he be angry and not sin? And then we move to the example of Jesus in righteous indignation, right? Mark chapter 2. This is the only place in Scripture where the actual word anger is associated with Jesus Christ. Now, one could make the argument, well, doesn't it talk about the Old Testament, Jehovah, Jesus Christ? It talks about him being angry. We'll talk about that. Mark chapter 3. The word anger comes in verse 5, but let's read the previous verses to get context. Lindsay, will you read chapter 3, verses 1 through 3?
And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand. And they watched him, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. And he saith unto the man which had the withered hand, Stand forth. And he saith unto them, Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath day, or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they held their peace. And when he looked round about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he saith unto the man, Stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it forth, and his hand was restored whole as the other.
So what do you think? Why was Jesus angry?
Well, I think we have our own connotation of the word anger, because in this reading, that doesn't sound like intense, like blood-boiling anger. It's just more like this intense sorrow and, like, how could you be so...
I'm healing a man, and you're upset?
Right, yeah. And I can't think that that's like, anger, anger. I think we have a different idea of what anger is.
Our anger is...
Let's do this. Let's try to just list out when God is angry, what's that like? And when you're angry, what's that like? Just throw out some words. Noelle, when you get angry, it's...
It's blood boil.
Okay.
I don't really get the way real people do.
Not good for your heart.
Yes.
Okay.
It's like unhealthy.
Okay.
Unhealthy.
So is God's anger healthy? What else comes with it when we get angry? And we're going to see the saints.
Reaction.
Okay.
Yeah,
reactive.
Punishment or revenge.
Yeah, revenge and reaction. Yes.
Reactive.
Natural man.
Not that Susan and I are anywhere like that.
Punishment. What'd you say, Lynn?
Natural man.
You know, when we go in that way, or you get angry, or people are stupid. Yeah, so stupid. That's even worse. Yeah.
It usually does make us stupid.
Yeah, it does.
I know I've done dumb things and I'm upset.
Yeah.
You get I think maybe that's part of it.
Self-regret.
You get angry at yourself. You do things that you regret.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. It leads you in a bad
path. It wasn't exactly. Something that was thought out.
I know. When I do stupid stuff, I get angry at myself.
Okay.
It's like an unhealthy emotion. You know, it's out of control.
Out of control.
That's a good one, out of control.
Would you say your agency is infringed when you get angry?
Yes, because you kind of lose. Sometimes you infringe by yourself. Yeah. You lose your agency sometimes.
I was talking with, 2 weeks ago, they needed a second teacher for Seth's primary class. And so we got in there, and I can't remember exactly what it was we were talking about, but anger came up. And what's Kim Fagan's 10-year-old, 11-year-old? What?
Wes?
Yeah. So Wes, he was just convinced. He's like, no, when you're angry, that makes you powerful. You play a lot better when you get angry. And Seth jumped right on that. He's like, yeah, anger is, that's like, you do your best when you're angry.
Yeah, Natalie.
In sports, right?
Yes.
In sports.
Yes.
Which is why I hate competitive sports. It's that very element that's involved.
So who does it right? We're not doing very good on this side of the list.
Dada.
Oh, God.
Daddy.
I have anger. Well, in this example in the temple, it's selfless. It's not because I've been...
Yeah. Okay. It's...
Disappointed.
Yeah, okay. Sadness, a disappointment, I would say more than...
It is still passionate, though.
Uh-huh. Not revenge-seeking. Well, yeah, you're passionate.
Indignant.
Sarah, I do come in here. I do come in mine.
Not revenge. Indignant? I'm not that smart. Indignation, what is that?
I don't know, but it's kind of what they use in the footnote sometimes. It's righteous indignation, so whatever
dignity
that is.
Dignity must be the root word there, dignified, dignity.
Oh, yeah. No, I've never noticed that before. Could we sum it up? Selfless? Selfish?
Yeah, that's right. That's a good one. Selfish.
Well, if you think about it, you take any, and this is going to be... Push back if you disagree. Could we take any characteristic of God and say he's got the selfless version of it, and we, as humanity, are suffering to overcome the selfish version and to redeem those into the selfless version? I mean, we can take any, take truth. How could we use truth selfishly?
Black man.
Okay. You know,
what did she say?
She said black.
Black
male.
Oh, black.
You should hear what she told me about you yesterday.
What?
Sweet.
I'd like to hear.
Love dirt on me.
I'll up the ante.
You know, it's very popular to say, look, I'm not going to lie. And then someone just, they kind of beat you over the head with something that may not be the most pleasant to hear. And so we have virtues of kindness and truth, and how are we supposed to uphold both of those? Well, and that's usually when we get into trouble, is when we take one virtue and we elevate it above all others, and that usually becomes a selfish form of it. For example, tolerance in contemporary society. It's the only virtue that seems to matter anymore.
It's only one-sided tolerance.
Well, right. and that's the thing, is it's done in a selfish way. Look, everybody needs to be tolerant because I feel like people need to tolerate me. But if I'm going to selflessly be tolerant, I'm going to try to turn that virtue outwards and say, look, I totally disagree with you, and I don't care if you're not tolerant of me, but I'm going to try and understand where you're coming from. And that's tough. It's really tough. In the Old Testament, when it talks about God being an angry or a jealous God, in fact, it was verses in the Old Testament about God being a jealous God that caused Oprah real consternation about the Judeo-Christian formulation of God. And she kind of thought, well, I don't want to believe in a God that's jealous of me. That doesn't make any sense.
Oprah would say that.
Well, and if you're interested, you can go watch the YouTube videos. I mean, people, and anyway, they're out there. But jealous or angry in the Old Testament, that's our English translation of a Hebrew word that could either go as jealous or
zealous.
So, God sees us going after other gods, and again, he's not reacting or saying, oh, I'm going to get them, or how dare you go after these other gods, but instead, it's, what are you doing that for? You're not going to find any peace or love or fulfillment in those things.
I think it's kind of like the shepherd at that point, too, you know, going after and not letting us wander, or, you know, he'll do what he can within his power, not taking away our agency, but going after.
Hey, you guys go do that in the gym. Good job. It's okay.
Or you can sit down.
Or you can go play by the trash can.
That would be my choice.
Make a little basket. Get some paper and throw some things.
Yeah, piano could be your house.
Yeah, go sit under the piano. It could be your clubhouse.
Great little house.
There's a clubhouse right there. You see under the
I wonder if, let's use a real word. Let's say a house is burning down and one of us is trapped inside. An emergency response someone comes into the room and says, follow me, let's go, I'll get you out of here. The response is, okay, what are you for?
Why not?
Really? You want all the glory and the praise? You want me to follow? And I think sometimes we react that way and we see somebody is asking me to follow, to submit my agency, to listen to someone else's counsel or guidance. I see God as that rescuer who comes after us. But it's selfless. I mean, he's putting the eternal destiny of one of his children on the line by saying, come down here to mortality, and you might mess it up. When I come seeking after you, you may say, I want nothing to do with you. And that's rough. But that's that's what makes the human condition viable for our ultimately becoming like him, is he has risked everything. And I think, you know, when we talk about Satan's plan was to force us all to be good, that's also never quite sat very well with me. I mean, the Bible dictionary talks about those that followed Satan's plan, that they were the rebellious in nature. I mean, can you see one of these rebellious spirits coming like, all right, God, I'm going to pretend you're God, Kanoa. You kind of got the holy shine, the blonde hair.
I have
a
pregnant glow.
All right, God.
Get started.
Yeah, I want you to force me to be good. Make me be good. How many rebellious people do you know sound like that? Instead, maybe it was something a little more like this. Mario, if you go down to Earth, you might not make it back. I mean, there are going to be all these temptations, and you might fall for one of those. So, on my plan, everybody comes back automatically. Do you really want to chance it? Or how about this one? You know, if you go down to mortality, there's going to be kids getting abused. There's going to be war. There's going to be all types of distress. I mean, people are going to be able to do what they want. And some people are going to totally take advantage of that. You really want those types of things to happen to these, our brothers and sisters? I think it's Satan, huh?
Yeah.
Next Hippo film. Who knows? see what I can do. But it's always interesting to watch, because usually at the heart of all effective individuals are going to be some virtue that is either used for selfless or for selfish reasons. But at the core, there's some attribute of godliness that is causing that person or feeding that person something that makes them effective at what they're doing. So, God be praised for the blessings we have, but also be careful, because all too quickly, those things can turn into vices.
I found indignant on the internet, but it doesn't seem as, I don't know. It says feeling or showing anger or annoyance at what is perceived as unfair treatment.
Okay.
It was self, what was it?
Definitions may have switched, but look it up. Do Webster's 1828 dictionary.
Okay.
If anybody's, I mean, when we come across these words in the Doctrine and Covenants, it's the 1828 dictionary, and that would have been the dictionary that Joseph was using. Not saying that he's going to the dictionary looking up words,
but that
gives us the cultural definition of what he would have understood those words to mean. So you can look that one up.
Hey, here's an interesting little tidbit as far as word definitions.
Sure.
Did you know that light-minded is a Mormon word?
Really?
You looked up in the dictionary, it says a Mormon word. Really? A Mormon-created word, light-minded.
Oh, really?
Seriously?
Yeah, interesting.
That's cool.
I want to
embroider that one and just put it up there. Yeah. It's light-minded. Yeah, we got that. That one's ours.
Yeah, it's ours.
I mean, our Jewish friends, they have all their Yiddish
right.
words,
yeah.
right?
Light-minded, Mormon word. I don't know when the first, I have to go to the OED and see if it's in there. And
yeah.
The first,
I'll have to go check that one out. So, anyway. Good discussion. Anything else you want to talk about? Anger? Can you be angry and not sin? Or, are we happy with that? Violence? Is it ever justified? I'd say here, yes. There? No. And how do we know when it's okay to maybe lay on hands? That's a tough one. But I think that's what the saints are dealing with right now, is they have been kind of kicked around Missouri for a while. It's getting difficult, and they don't really know what to do. They're seeing that they're going to be kicked out of another place, and a lot of them start to get excited about that. Look, we don't want to have to pull up roots and move again. It's just not fair. So, 1838. First of all, in June, and then in July, Sidney Rigdon, he gives two sermons. One of them still exists, and you can look it up if you're interested. In fact, I printed off the last bit of it, but I left it in my car. I don't want to go get it. I'll just paraphrase it for you. He gives two sermons. So, Sidney Rigdon, two sermons. The Salt Sermon, and it's just referred to as July 4th sermon. And in these sermons, he argues for, look, saints, We've been kicked around enough. It's time for us to put our foot down, plant our banner on the ground, and say, this is where we are, and anybody who comes after us, they're going to get it. And it's a rather inflammatory sermon. Now, we don't have the actual text from this one anymore, but I read through this one this morning, and he makes the analogies to Israel in bondage in Egypt. And he says, just as Moses brought his children out of Egypt and took the wealth of Egypt, so will we do to these people of Missouri. Now, if you're a Missourian, and you have one of the leaders of this church whose membership are just flowing into your community, he gets up the July 4th celebration and just says, look, we're going to fight for ours, and if you get in our way, too bad. It's going to cause some problems. And indeed, it does start to cause some problems. So the saints, they're flowing into Caldwell County, and what that does is the saints, they voted as a block. Now, people would argue that we do the same thing today, right? I mean, we just lost our one Latter-day Saint Democratic leader. Harry Reid just retired. Can you think of any other prominent Latter-day Saint Democrats?
Jim Matheson.
Okay, there you go. Susan's going to say, okay, me.
I was going to say, you can't assume
really?
That the whole body politics.
We're the only one on our street.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't think you guys assume that everyone is Republican. I don't think you can make that assumption.
Rocker was president. I was secretary for years and years. And
really?
Focus, yeah.
Right here. We have Democratic
royalty. No, we had Obama sign on our street, and then people kept stealing it.
Are you serious?
And then they kept putting a Republican one, joking in our neighborhood, yeah. Because we were the only ones in our neighborhood. There was one other guy up the street.
Hey, I'm non-voter. I'm still a Canadian citizen, so I'm not.
Oh, I was going to say, are you going to get one person?
Erin.
Summer.
Okay.
All right, we got two in the ward. Three, counting Rocky, right?
And Emily.
And Emily.
Rocky, we have a few more.
Okay.
Rocky's a political science major. He's very good. But then we come out here, so I don't know. These might be way more liberal.
Well,
than Utah Republicans.
Yeah, it's funny because I'll paraphrase C.S. Lewis. You know, it's the adversary often sends counterfeits in pairs of opposites, in hopes that our dislike of the one opposite will cause us to hold even stronger to the other. And I
enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes, kind of. And so,
we're still good Mormons, though.
Oh, for sure.
We keep telling people in our ward, we're still good Mormons.
Oh, my God. Well, and that's the thing. And so, you know, I taught in Utah for almost a decade. And most mornings when I would drive to the seminary building, their conservative talk radio would be on. And so I'd listen to that. And then we moved here to Chicago, and I'd drive all around. You can't get conservative talk radio here, which I'm grateful for because I was getting a little tired of it. And so you have liberal talk radio that I listen to. And guess what? It almost sounds exactly the same. Now, the conclusions are different, but they bring up a lot of the same points, but the conclusions just go in the opposite directions, which is okay, but the vitriol, the anger, the bashing, it's all there on both sides. And so, am I advocating that we all become centrists and just hold on to something in the middle? I don't know if that's the right answer. But it's tough. And the saints here... I mean, Sidney Rigdon gets up and he just starts pounding the pulpit saying, we're going to watch out for our own, and if you get in your way, you're going to get what's coming. So, eventually, August of 1838, we have the Gallatin Election Day Battle. Where there are a bunch of saints who come and they're going to vote in their particular way all together. And the people there in Missouri, they say, look, if you show up to vote, there's going to be trouble. And so this Gallatin Election Day battle, it becomes the first skirmish in the Mormon War. Now, injuries, no fatalities at this battle, at least that I know of. On the Latter-day Saint side, there weren't any. Those on the other side didn't report any that I can find. Maybe somebody's done better history than I have, but I didn't detect any there. But that's the first skirmish. No! No, there were two. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, it was a battle. That one is shortly followed up by the Battle of Crooked River. Now, this one is a little more famous. Because this is where we get our first Latter-day Saint martyr, so to say. David W. Patton, president of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, otherwise referred to as Captain Fear Not.
Wow, that's what they call him.
Yeah, he. Some of the Latter-day Saints are pinned down, so he runs out there, you know, past the lines to try to go save these individuals and pull them back, and he gets shot. Doesn't die there on the battlefield, but he's taken back to camp, and there he dies shortly thereafter. So we lose our first member, presiding member of the Quorum of the Twelve there at that battle.
So these are both, the Gallatin and the Crooked Creek, these are both like organized battlefield, take both sides. Unlike Hans Mill, which is more just an attack. Mm-hmm. So these are like,
these are like, we're going to show up and we're going to...
Civil War-ish.
Kind of,
West
yeah.
Side Story.
Yes. They all show up and start snapping. Yeah, Gallatin, it was just more of a skirmish, but Crooked River,
organized.
That one, yeah, was more organized.
Is this in Far West?
In Missouri, yeah, in that area.
Want to stay there.
Yeah, and so then we get to, you know, there are all these bad feelings that are going on. Governor Boggs, he says, hey, we got to do something about these Mormons. They're getting out of control. And so that's where the actual extermination order happens. And again, if you want to read the thing, you can go look on the internet and read that one. Let me give you, I don't know, do you even care about the dates? I really just care more about this. This happens, and this happens, and this happens, and this happens.
And they end in an apology, too, right?
Yeah. No, I don't care about the dates. I mean, isn't I just that, like to know ballpark yet.
I just like to know the order of how things happen.
Is this kind
give
of
one day
the talk?
The what?
Remember last
James
spring?
Evans? His talk about Illinois?
I don't know.
Oh, the state conference.
But last spring when we went to Nauvoo? Or was it?
We went to Independence in Far West also.
Yeah. Is that when they were talking about it? Because when the temple was dedicated?
No.
I'm getting things confused.
The Kansas City Temple.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what it was. And then that's at the same time that they offered the apology.
Yeah, it all came kind of around that time. Battle of Crooked River. Also during this time, there's kind of guerrilla warfare going on both sides. And so then you have the Battle of Crooked River that's a little more organized. Governor Boggs' extermination order, that happens in October of 1838. 3 days after the extermination order is when you get Hans Mill.
When you mean guerrilla warfare, you mean doing stuff to other people.
Yeah. You have states taking pot shots at Missourians and Missourians taking pot shots at Mormons. It's just ugly. I mean, it's a part in our history that I look at and I think,
hi, Uncle Pirate.
Doesn't sound the best. I mean, it's also about this
very human at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes maybe we want to elevate ourselves because we have so much truth.
Yeah.
But it sounds really human.
Yeah,
exactly. Is it warm in here or just me?
I turned it down. Or I turned it up, sorry. You can turn it down.
Okay.
I was just getting cold.
Go ahead.
What was that? 27 miracles, what was that one that we watched?
17 miracles.
17 miracles? Yeah, I can't remember.
Lindsay had the inspired version for 27
miracles.
but in that, it kind of reminded me, gave me a good perspective, you know, that if we do get to those dire points, that we all are human and that we will just follow our instincts. Mm-hmm. So then maybe they're getting close to that point. I don't know.
So is that justified?
I don't know. I think God knows and couldn't be forgiving if our circumstances were. I mean, we still have to try. He knows our hearts, but.
I think we're afraid to say, yes, we'll be, you know.
It's dangerous to say. It depends. Exactly. If God says yes, it's okay, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're afraid to say that we'll be, that we're going to do harm, that we're going to, you know, in the name
Mommy,
of our Mormon, we're afraid to say that because especially now with social media, especially with the news, that can come out, there's only one person, and then they're going
going to make that whole church thing. I think we're afraid to have to come out and
say, hi, Willie.
Yes,
hi.
We're going to do that.
Where'd
you go? Because you don't know the circumstance. We don't
better go. Better go. Vampire William's coming.
This news ticket, this, you know, I'm pretty afraid to say that. I'm afraid to say that. Will I be? Will I be? You know, I don't know. What if somebody actually doesn't do something that bad? And I'm going to have to, you know, what do? They write something in my garage, you know, and I really, or they going to actually come and, you know, run over my child, or I going to distribute, you know, what bad, how bad is it that you just...
Well, how about you get fired?
Because of your religious beliefs?
Right.
Yeah, then
that happens.
Yeah.
This is maybe an extension, but like at what point should people have stood up during the Holocaust to say, hey, that's not okay to treat people that way.
Right. And if
bad guys are alive.
Maybe it wouldn't have gotten so.
Yeah.
So here's a hard story. You ready for this one? That'll make you squirm in your seat.
Bad guys are alive.
You guys ready for a story? I'm going to tell you about a guy named Helmut Hubner. Helmut, I guess, not Helmut. Brother Hubner was a youth in Germany, Hamburg, where I served my mission. And he did not obey the law of the land. And the law of the land was you don't listen to the BBC, but you listen to whatever German media produces, and that's how you get your news. But they had a little transistor radio that he would sneak up to his attic, he and his friends. They would listen to this, they would hear the BBC, their side of the news. They would print pamphlets and go distribute those around Hamburg. Eventually, he is accosted by the Nazis and executed, and his local church congregation excommunicates him.
They write a book about this.
Yeah, I read that whole book.
A couple of books about it, yeah.
Oh.
So what do you think? When we excommunicated the kid for just doing what he felt was right in his heart.
Wait, he was a member of our church?
Mm-hmm. Now, he has been reinstated. I mean, all of this happens, you know, after he's dead, but...
Because we were adults.
Come
on. Long land kind of thing, and probably protecting other members, you know. I'm not gonna point fingers.
Stapes was probably pretty nervous at that point, you know. We better step on this little fire in our own congregation, or they could all come down on us, and so it was more like a...
Self-preservation
of the larger body.
We've had some rather prominent excommunications over, you know, Kate Kelly, who leads the ordained women group, and John DeLynn, who feels like he's excommunicated for his stance on supporting gay marriage. Is there any parity between all of these? Sometimes we think these difficulties. No, we don't go through anything like that right now. Now, we may not be showing up, you know, lines drawn in the sand with our muskets saying, okay, let's get ready to go. But philosophically and ideologically, some of these things are lining up. And so how do we best navigate those when we, as members of the church, disagree with other members of the church? How do we make sure these things don't escalate into tragedies?
Well, the thing with it,
Kate
Kelly,
she was bringing so many people away from the church. I think they had to stop that. Not just her beliefs, but being there in Utah, I mean, there was just people in droves leaving. I mean, and going with her, that was something that was so fascinating to watch on the news constantly, what she was doing and how she was... And when it was on the news, I went to look at her website to see what they were doing, what their philosophy was, and kind of interesting to see. And there's just people and testimonies about it and things like that. And we had a few people on our stake wearing pants to support her and stuff. And they show up at conference and they show on the news just droves of people waiting in line. And then they had their, and on the website it showed where to show up, where we're going to meet, and then where we go from there, and then the news media asks you this, we do, we're going to show up for a conference, and we're going to all walk to the place where we're going to go, Temple Square. I mean, it was so well organized. By the second time, well organized, everything. And this thing was kind of going out of, you know, out of control of, I think, what the churches, you know, started little. I think that was getting to be a huge thing, so I don't think it was working anymore. I think the communication was kind of what the church needed the last straw. I mean, had to do. So
So I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, the church kind of has to do some things to kind of stand their point. Mm-hmm. You know, make their points, make a stand. So maybe they do have to go, you know, they try to do everything they can, then they just have to make a stand.
Which is
they
tough.
Have to.
I mean, if...
Try.
I think so.
My thing is, like, if you don't like it, start your own church and be my guest.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Or should we try to open our wards and branches a little larger and say, I disagree with you, but there's stuff for you. It may be over there by the trash can. but we want you here. That's hard. It's some of these modern ideological wars that are being fought. And there are casualties on both sides. And so I
inspiration comes this way. It doesn't come this way. And I think there's a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, people are wanting to change it this way when it comes this way.
Yeah, and it is, it's a 21st century ideology, the grassroots movement and things that come from the people. We do have precedent for that in the church seminary that was started.
Yeah, seminary and primary and many.
Welfare program, came from individual stakes and then, but you're right, it was the church, the general church leadership that said, good idea.
Mm-hmm. I guess on gay marriage and stuff mm-hmm. like that, I mean, those kind of things, we are kind of meeting, but I mean, they're asking to change doctrine and stuff. And I mean, I have a gay son. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very difficult. But it needs to come, some of the church things changing, that asking to come this way, kind of need to come down
this way.
Needs to come
from the leadership.
Yeah. Some of those hard things need to come this way when they're asking things to change this way.
Have you seen Elder Christofferson's, he has a little vignette from a news agency in Utah, talks about he and his relationship with his gay brother. It's really good. If anybody, I posted it on my Facebook page. Do you know what that is, Susan?
I just ignore Facebook, but I am on it.
Well, I try to only post worthy things. Elder Christofferson and his gay brother. Yeah, I can't remember his brother's name.
I don't know
about that. But it's really good, and
I
it talks about
friends.
By your choice.
No. She has a pending friend request for me. I've been waiting for her to accept it for 8 months.
I have a pending friend request this long.
She is waiting for me on Facebook.
I'm going to totally ask for one now.
I completely ignore them. I don't go on there often.
I'll take that personally if you don't ask.
My kids tell me Facebook's passé.
It's all Tumblr and Instagram now.
Yeah, Instagram.
Yeah. So, to draw us back to what's going on here, I erased our lists, but as we approach these contemporary difficult issues, are we doing so with this side of attributes, or are we doing so with the divine side of attributes? Well, that's something that I think we can only really answer for ourselves. But I do think that if we are going to weather these storms, it's going to be those that weather with patience and kindness and love, but also loyalty and faith and obedience. And again, kind of these conflicting virtues. We can't elevate any of them over the others. We need to look to the example of the Savior. Because yes, he was kind, but he was also demanding. He did teach, you know, to come follow me, you know, take on my burden, paraphrasing Jesus, that's horrible. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. But the rich young ruler says, what should I do? And he says, give up all that thou hast and come follow me.
That doesn't sound light.
That's not light. You know what I mean? And so we got to make sure that we don't caricature Jesus and build him up in the image of God that we want him to be, but that we read his characteristics and attributes across all scripture as he interacts with multiple different cultures. And I think we get a better view of who he is and how he interacts with us. Because I know we're all guilty of kind of portraying, you know, those that want Jesus to be the hippie sandal wearing, hey everybody, it's just about love.
Anything goes.
You can find that Jesus in the scriptures, but you have to ignore the one that's demanding. You have to ignore the whole Old Testament. You have to ignore a lot of the Book of Mormon. And the Doctrine and Covenants, that Jesus doesn't show up a whole lot where he's just saying, look, saints, it's just all about love. says it a few times, but more likely he's going to say, those whom I love, I will also chasten. And that gets tough. And the people, they're experiencing some chastening here. And the prophet himself is going to endure some major chastening in just a little while. Hans Mill, you know the story? I mean, it's sad. We could go through the details and talk about the little boy that, you know, gets his head caved in, and it's just awful. I don't think we'll go through the details. If you want to read the details, you can find them in myriads of places.
Will you give us, like, a summary?
So a bunch of saints, they had moved to Hans Mill. They were agitating, saying, look, if the Missourians come, we're going to defend our own. The Missouri militia, they come. I can't remember the numbers, but they far outnumber the Latter-day Saints that are there. They all run into the Latter-day Saints. They run into a blacksmith shop. They grab their armaments. They start shooting back, but they're just overrun. Men, women, and children are massacred, and it's just, it's bad. But you can't say they weren't completely innocent. I mean, perhaps the women and children were innocent in it. But the agitation had been going on. The guerrilla warfare had been happening.
And then after that,
also some type of warning?
Yeah, the prophet says you need to come gather with the saints.
Yeah,
get out of there.
Yeah. What made them not gather?
This is our land. We're going to hold our own.
Oh.
We're not getting kicked out again.
Okay.
No. And we are. We retrench.
It's just those few that the agitators.
And like I said, I don't think we can say everybody who got killed was guilty.
Yeah. It was just the few that stayed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, there were only like 15 people that got killed.
Like 12 or something.
Yeah,
and
just like a
It wasn't a ton of people.
Fewer them, it's significant, but it wasn't
a massacre sounds like
a large number. Yeah, the massacre sounds like it's 100,000 people, but in fact it was under 20 people.
It wasn't hundreds and hundreds of people that got killed. But those that did get killed,
It was like innocent, attacked, so it was.
So, that happens. During all of this, I mean, the question is, well, where's Joseph during all this? He's not at Crooked River. He's not at the Gallatin Election Day battle. He's not at Hans Mill. Where's Joseph in all of this? Well, Joseph and some of the church leadership, this is when a lot of the accusations and the lawsuits come against Joseph. And he's just kind of being led from one court battle to another court battle to another court battle. He's going all over the place. Eventually, what happens is he and Sidney Rigdon and Parley P. Pratt and a few others, they're scooped up, they're taken to prison, and you've heard the story about Joseph Smith standing up in shackles and saying, ye fiends of the infernal pit. And he commands the men to be silent. Well, what are they joking about? Those Missourians, they're joking about Hans Mill. They're joking about all of these things and the atrocities that they've committed against the saints during this Mormon war. So that's where that story fits in. Now, Joseph, he's on his way to a very famous place that we'll talk about next week. He's on his way to Liberty Jail. So he goes to Liberty Jail at the end of 1838. And I think it's like November 30th, 1838. But he's been in custody since about October. Hans Mill happens October 30th. So Joseph has been custody. He's been in custody for most of October, all of November, goes to Liberty Jail November 30th. He will not get out of Liberty Jail until April 6th. Of the following year. You've been to Liberty Jail? It's not too far away.
No,
I've got to take a road trip.
I know, we need to.
It's dreadful.
And it's probably the cold time, huh?
Uh-huh.
November to April.
And it's not insulated, and it's small, and it's damp.
How did he get out? He just like got escaped, right? So they sort of gloss over that.
One of the jailers just kind of like, hey, here's a chance. I mean, but he'd been there for...
No.
What is that? December, January, February, March. So yeah.
Yeah, it's cold months.
Been there for 4 months. It's not like he had any time.
Jail?
No.
Dark.
But it's a dark. It's a difficult time. And I wish that we could just point and say the saints were completely in the right and the Missourians were completely in the wrong, but it's not that easy. And I think when we look at our modern day battles, those that are pro pro-gay marriage are completely in the wrong and those that are against it are completely in the right. No, I'm sure there are atrocities performed, and I shouldn't say atrocities, it makes it sound like a Hallsville massacre. But how we approach these things, and that's why I wanted to start with this discussion of, is religious violence ever justified, or is anger ever justified? Because we're going to be fighting our battles in our own way. You recall, the war in heaven was not a war of muskets and cannons and guns, but a war of ideas. And we fight those same things today. So hopefully we're doing well with that. That's all I've got for today. Anything else that you want to talk about, or questions that you have, or anything else to raise?
The one thing about, like, so interesting, like the thing about even women wearing pants in church.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Utah, that, like, such a faux pas.
Yeah.
And you come here.
In Hyde Park? No big deal.
Yeah. And when we go on our mission in downtown Salt Lake, the refugees, they're passing the sacrament in their bathing suits. You know, and they're wearing, you know, they're, because they're refugees, and they're wearing pants.
Susan's thinking, I'm going to go to that party.
No, they have their white shirts, but the boys, you know.
Oh, they've got their shirts.
Yeah, because they just don't know. And the women are wearing pants because we're just happy they're there. Mm-hmm. And there's some people that wear pants here. Just happy to be here, but in Salt Lake, it's like you would never be caught dead because everybody, you know,
it means something.
Yes, it means something.
Not the issue.
No, that's the thing. It's not the issue. But man, it sure is an issue. They are making a stand, and so the thing is, what's a real stand? You know that they're really trying to push in that men and women, and you know, and really. I mean, I'm kidding. In Utah. You're in Utah, this is a huge deal. They're against
it. But to me, it's just like a physical representation of just an attitude of dissent.
But it was all over Facebook. And you, this one day, you were going to make a stand for women. And you were going to, you know.
Rally everyone to make this stand.
Yes, yeah. And you were, and Utah women were making a stand. And this made me sad that these Utah women, you would think, that no, here in the church, and your neighbor was a member, everybody's a member, were...
You're a Democrat, though. You should be wearing pants, too.
I know, but that does not make a difference. We're going to make a stand, and you're surprised to see the people that were making a stand. And you're surprised to see the people that are starting to be, what is it, weeded out, you know how they say, that are making a stand against the church. And it's... I want to say, sadly, it's nice to come to Chicago where you get the real people, you know, here, the real people.
Yes,
the real people are here. The people that come to church are really coming to church.
Mm-hmm.
When I was just surprised that, oh my gosh, and then they're putting on Facebook or whatever, I'm still viable even though I'm on Facebook. And still, and are just really for the thing, da, 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 da. You know, it was just really eye-opening to me how these things are coming about, and the church thing, and talking about, and the prophet is, you know, well, they're kind of a little bit iffy, and a little bit, things are starting to get grayer. And Rock and I came out here, one of the reasons we really wanted to come out here is because we had some of our friends are starting to, you know, like that. It's just starting to go, and it was really nice change here. So that's all the thing I wanted to say about that. Was very interesting to me.
It's fun when you do go to different areas of the church. You have different cultures. I mean, same church, we claim the same gospel, we claim that we all belong to the same church.
Yes, exactly.
But different wards have their own cultures. I mean, Lynn, how would you characterize the North Shore Second Ward with the Hyde Park Ward?
Yeah, I was just the dynamics of...
This is recorded.
Yeah, that's fine. I said this out loud in ward council. I don't know, were you there that one time?
Maybe.
I think it was Brother Trapp asked me, so what, you know, you're new to the ward, what are your observations?
I think just because it was more transient, we had students...
Lots of students.
...turning over all the time, so there's just a... But they were all really strong people that were in the ward. Like, I really appreciated the primary teachers there also. They were really calm.
Yeah, it's fun when your child's primary teacher was one of the five Browns on the piano family.
Oh,
Yeah, Greg Brown was one of our, Ben's teacher?
Seth's.
Yeah, that was fun.
But even, just those students down there, like they were, and for the most part, their testimonies were pretty solid.
Sunday school is pretty liberal.
Yeah, I was pretty liberal.
In what respect? They just had views that were just a little bit.
There was a teacher who said that he didn't feel like reading the Book of Mormon for a couple of years was okay. Like he just needed the
break. He needed to take a Book of Mormon break.
and you know, because he was a pretty
he was getting his PhD in classics.
He was a pretty substantial voice in the war, and a lot of people respected him. So by him saying that, I think that could have made them feel justified by following that example.
You know, a suspicion of scripture and a suspicion of authority, just more of a milieu of, look, if we just think long enough and hard about this, did I say that correctly?
Yeah.
We can figure this out. We don't need Salt Lake to tell us how to interpret this. We can figure this out.
Or even just like there's a lesson on the true and living church. Let's just take out the true part, because I think that's a little...
Truth is everywhere, which is true.
Right, yeah, but they just... Anyway, but the audacity didn't take out of the lesson that says true and living church. It's like, let's cross out.
Let's get rid of the true part.
Let's just look at the living.
I didn't think this one.
Just very, if they were to err, it was to err on the accepting love. Don't worry about the hard part. Just let's make everyone feel comfortable. So that's them. Let's talk about our one. It's nice, you know, we only have North Shore 2 people here today, so the North Shore 1 people, if they hear this and they want to make comments, they can later. What extremes could we possibly be guilty of? Or do we have any tendencies or leanings that would put us in this selfish camp? Anything that we have to watch out for?
Are we outing people?
Are we?
Are you saying as a North Shore second?
Just as a ward. What may be some of our difficulties? Just things to watch out of.
I'm coming from a totally different angle. Because I think this is the most humble, nice, sweet ward. I'm coming from a totally different place.
I think we have a little bit of an attitude towards Utah. Like, we're so glad we don't live there.
Amen.
I felt that.
You know, and now Noelle is like a new convert. It's like, I'm so glad I'm in the West. Because we are kind of, you know, we're not real. West, we're not East. We're real, we're true. We're just like middle of the road.
And if everyone could just do church like we do.
That's right.
And I'm not one of those that moved here and wishes I could go back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here and happy I'm not there. I have come here and seen the light. I have come here and know that that is too much. This is wonderful. We love this.
We all love this.
Yeah, we do.
It would be hard to move to
Utah.
Things that it would be great, and we all have an awesome climate, and there's potential for great, but that this part just drives you just like, you know, the narrow-mindedness and the fake church. The
church of culture, of outward
culture. Church of culture, yes.
And that's not, I think there are pockets of that all over
anywhere.
Sure. But I mean, like, we had the last word that we came from, I really appreciated that. Like, our bishop and the counselors, I feel like they did a really good job of showing love and humor and.
We came from a really great Utah
Board. Of course, there are many wonderful people in
Utah Board.
I'm not saying that, but just all the whole composite together just gets to be a bit much.
No, we didn't really.
I'll tell you what. They have a culture of missionaries. I mean, were it not for Utah, we wouldn't have a missionary force.
We left a war of 27 missionaries.
Mm-hmm. You know how many the Wilmette Stake has? How would not have many? As an entire state. He knows.
We went. We split our ward, and we went from this ward to a very humble ward before we moved out here. And this humble ward was very, very good to us. We kept it for our mission to change. But it's very hard for to raise a son who's a real active son and a non-active son, and a non-active son, who we're really close to, very nice, and positive, but he sees the culture differently now, see it through his eyes, when everyone's a Mormon, or not a Mormon, or not active Mormon, or, you know, the half-active Mormon, now to see it through his eyes, see how they're acting. It's hard to raise them when they're in Utah. We're here. Not everyone's Mormon, and it's a,
you do your thing, I do my thing.
Exactly. But these people are Mormon, and but not acting quite so great, or, you know, your neighbors, or, you know, they're not always so nice, or not more Mormonly, or whatever. So it's kind of hard to, all they see is the Mormon, they don't see the natural man, you know.
Yeah.
They see they're supposed to be perfect. They put them more on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. This is your church. You're supposed to be this way. They know too much. Okay, this is the thing, is they know too much about our church. Okay?
So when you're walking down the street with a Diet Coke, it's like...
Okay, so now this is the worst thing. My son, who is gay, is a group of you know, gays that are return missionaries. And so they know way more. My son did not have a mission. So now he knows everything. Mm-hmm. So now they just pick out the things that they like to pick out, and then so they're all like, oh, this and this and this and this. So I'm, you know, they're all great to have dinner with things, but they have one thing after the other. When you pick out the things out of the church, you know, and these return missionaries, you know, really study, they're a lot more than me. Mm-hmm. You know, some things out of the church, they have their pick and choosing things that sound wonderful, mm-hmm, that are against our church, that are, you know, that they, this new thing that the church brought down, you know, that they just had the, that in Utah, that just passed the law. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, they're not going to.
It was the non-discrimination religious freedom.
Yeah.
Act. So,
well, they're not going to help any doctors. They're not going to have a doctor's not going to help anybody who is gay. They're not going to treat anyone as gay.
There's a huge population of gay people in Utah.
Yes. So I went back and read it. Well, they're not going to give anyone who wants an abortion, because there's many other people out there who will help them.
Yeah.
Well, there, you know, of course they don't have to, because there's other people. Well, there, that doesn't have anything to do with it. But they're pulling out things that make them sound good to them. So that's hard. Am I just ranting on my own thing? And it's recorded.
I'll end my son. I'll end with one scriptural example. So we know the anti-Nephi Lehis. They're Lamanites who want to be with the Nephites. And so it's the group that Ammon converts. They leave the land of Nephi. They come up to Zarahemla. They're given the land of Jershon. The people who were converted, they bury their weapons of war. Okay? They're kind of going completely against the culture that they came from. They're converted at this point. Now...
Sorry.
You're dead. They're changing, and then they have to teach why they do what they do to their children. Now... we know the end of the story, because what happens is the Lamanites, they come attack these people, and the stripling warriors, because their parents made a covenant not to take up arms, their sons, they're willing, and they'll say, we'll fight. Now imagine if just the application, if the culture of nonviolence was taught. Look, we're anti-Nephi Lehis, we don't fight. We just don't fight. Don't fight. Instead, what was taught to them, the reason for their conversion and for their not fighting, was their faith in Jesus Christ, and how they decided to, and they believe that as one sacrifices, that is how we, in a way, you know, show our commitment to Jesus Christ. Our particular application of that will be, we will bury our weapons of war. As the signs of what we used to turn to for salvation, our weapons, we are willing to give that up. So, a young person comes across and sees, wow, these people are going to come accost my family. If he's just converted to nonviolence, the stripling warriors would never have happened. But those young men were taught faith in God. They were taught, these things were grounded in the doctrine, not just in the application. So one thing I see with seminary right now is we're coming up on seminary graduation. A lot of the kids, they're trying to get their makeup work done and whatnot, and BYU applications are in and decisions are back. Somehow, I don't know, but in Illinois, you go to seminary so that you can get into BYU. I have heard that from so many seminary students and parents.
That's also why you...
It's what you... Oh, it's also why you do personal progress? Do they ask about that? On applications? Is that why you go to seminary? What is the doctrine behind seminary, or the principle behind participation in seminary? It's not so you can get into BYU, although we certainly have a culture, and that's the reason it's often thrown around. Probably has something more to do with the glory of God as intelligence, and that whatever light and truth we gain in this life will go on with us into the next. I mean, if we can solidify those things in the gospel, you know, we teach doctrine, we teach principles, we find pure doctrine in the gospel of Jesus Christ. We find principles, the church teaches us how to apply these things, and then we're left up to ourselves to really kind of figure out, you know, how does this work? We need to ground things here and not just here. Here's another one for you. This will make you squirm. Ready, Noah?
I've said enough. You go ahead.
We'll pick on Rivka then. You ready? Coffee. No, let's do alcohol. Can you think of someone who's probably in the celestial kingdom that ever drank alcohol?
That ever drank?
Yeah.
I can think of a lady who could have been baptized, probably should have been baptized, but she drank some wine every night because she was trying to avoid taking medication.
Okay.
Should have been a member, but she didn't want to give that up and was told no.
Even the early saints drank. I mean, I think there's probably quite a few people in the celestial kingdom.
Well, let's just take Noah.
He drank?
Well, we have a record of him being drunk in his cave. Do you think he's made it?
I think tons of people have.
But oftentimes we teach, if you're a good Latter-day Saint, don't drink alcohol. If you are a true believer in God, you won't drink alcohol.
But even people now can drink coffee.
They were not Latter-day Saints, so they were early days.
Oh, so that
but even now, you can become a member of the church and repent of that.
Right, right.
And coffee. And then...
How about Jesus' turning of water to... Well, that was just grape juice.
No, it's not.
If you read the story, though, and, you know, the what's his guy...
It was the year. What kind of wine? Like I was saying.
Right, right. Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, so if we just teach don't drink alcohol, we're missing out on the body and the spirit make up the soul of man. If I keep my body physically clean, I will be able to better feel inspiration from the Holy Ghost. Therefore, I will then fill in the blank. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, in the church, I think they're doing a much better job of trying to anchor things in doctrines and principles and get away from just the prescriptive, do this, don't do this, don't do this. In fact, if you look at the For Strength of Youth pamphlet, it used to go from girls should never wear curlers in their hair out in public.
Really?
That was in there, 1958.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, they used to say like, young people when staying in a hotel should not run in and out of hotel rooms. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, oh, when dancing, avoid doing a backbend. But you should focus on like clever footwork and smooth styling.
Oh, we
Okay, now...
Styling.
Now it's be modest in one's dress and appearance.
And
actions. And that's what it is. It just...
It does say what modesty is, though, which I appreciate.
Does it say anything about curlers?
No, but it does say short shorts.
And so it gives some applications
right,
of
but
those
I think
things.
That you're right. It starts with the scripture, and it starts with a this is why. And I think that's it reaches the youth so much.
Because
better.
You know what? The culture,
thinking
the youth
about
need
it.
To know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can't be just told this and this.
And if the why is because I said so, or how about this one, priesthood restriction. Why was that in place? Well, it was because black people were less valiant in the pre-mortal existence. You know, that's not, it's spurious. And if we do the same things with current issues about, you know, women's ordination or gay marriage, and we start to anchor our reasons for applying things the way we do into spurious ideas, we're going to do the same things. And so we just got to, anyway. I was finished 15 minutes ago, and here we are 20 minutes later. So I'd like to end with my testimony that the Lord is aware, and he knows, you know, just like in Missouri, that our humanity is going to show forth sometimes. Even with the midst of prophets and revelation and, you know, strong words like we have here, we're humans and we're going to goof stuff up. And I'm grateful that he's patient with us. And I hope that we can just be patient with those that don't see exactly how we do. That we can be patient with our own Missourians. They're people too, and God is interested in saving the Missourians, just like he was the saints. There's always two sides to a story. And when you look at what Joseph's saying about these people, after Liberty Jail, he takes on a whole different demeanor. His rough edges really are rubbed off. And he learned some things in Liberty that we'll talk about next week that really kind of elevate him to the next level. So be excited for that. But stick with the prophet. Stick with what all 15 are saying. No favorite apostles, okay? It's a sure way to get in trouble. But stick with the mainstream. We'll be fine. And shout out the name of Jesus Christ.